call this meeting of the Judiciary Committee to order. Quorum is present. Members, we've got two bills. The first is our omnibus policy bill, and the second is the EpiPen auto injectors. So, but we have to do the minutes, right? From April 4th. Do I have a motion? Representative Cantrell moves the minutes of April 4th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. The minutes are approved for April 4th. So the first bill, which apparently is second here, is House File 2705. It's the vehicle bill for our omnibus, and we have the author's amendment, which fixes a bunch of stuff. So I'll move that House File 2705 be recommended to be placed on. I'll recommend that House File 2705 be referred to Ways and Means. And we did the entire walkthrough last week, with the exception of the author's amendment. So, and I'm sorry, I didn't check with research ahead of time, but are we going to have you walk someone walk through the author's amendment? Okay, Mr. Johnson, thank you. I should have checked with you ahead of time on that.
Mr. Chair, members, the author's amendment is the A9 amendment. You'll see a lot of changes here, but this boils down essentially to two primary things. There was in the original bill $76,000 in the first year and $77,000 in the second year. That was for the Human Rights Department related to driver's licenses for undocumented individuals. That language has been removed. In addition, the quote-unquote red flags bill was added to the public safety bill, and as a result, a rider has gone into this bill. There's a change in the amount from the governor's bill. Initially, the courts had forecast the need for two full-time positions. Based on the language that actually went into the public safety bill, they have revised that, and they now believe they will need only one full-time position. So the total amount of money was reduced from a forecast $162,000 each year down to $81,000 each year. As a result of those two changes, that in essence freed up $157,000 in the first year and $158,000 in the second year. That money has been given to civil legal services through this amendment. And so those number changes that you see throughout give that new money to first the Supreme Court, essentially to pass through to civil legal services. So both the Supreme Court and civil legal services appropriations are increased by $157,000 in the first year, $158,000 in the second year. And human rights is reduced by $76,000 in the first year and $77,000 in the second year. And the district courts are reduced by $81,000 in the first and second years.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions for Mr. Johnson about the author's amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering procedurally, do you have to move the
yes.
DE and then before
I
we
do.
Can amend it?
I move the DE. What am I moving?
A19.
Moving the A19. 0359. And then I'm also moving the author's amendment to the A19, is that right? The A9?
Yeah, the
A9.
And Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Would you like me to walk through this as well?
Sure, yes, please.
And Mr. Chair, this actually works well with the end of the A9 amendment. If you look at both the A13 and the A9 amendment, first, there was a technical error on my behalf in removing some of that money. I neglected to remove the rider language. So if you look at the A13 amendment, I have corrected my own error at page 1, line 4 of that.
Excellent. Thank you.
In the rest of that, there are two transfers, and this also relates to the remainder of the author's amendment, the A9 amendment. This is all changes related to the forfeiture bill. In essence, the forfeiture bill as drafted directed money to four particular places: the public defenders, the Office of Justice Programs, the general fund, and now I'm losing one other one. What's the other one? OJP. Public defenders. Yeah, that's OJP. I think that's the four. We didn't have accounts created for all of those, so the author's amendment creates accounts and appropriates money. In essence, without creating an account and appropriating the money goes to them, but they don't have the authority to use any of that money, so it just sits there. So this will allow them to use that money that comes to them. The transfers that are in the A13 are based on the amount of money that will be going to the general fund from the change, and this is to fill in losses to the state patrol, that's the new section 14, and to the BCA, that's the new section 15, based on their estimates of lost revenue related to forfeiture.
Okay. The chair moves the A9, and the chair moves the A13.
Can we move? Okay. We have to move one at a time and vote on it.
The A13 is amending the A9. So I move the A9, and I move in the A13. That amends the A9. What? You're making a face at me. No, the A9 needs to be on the table in order for us to amend it with the A13. Am I wrong?
Mr. Chair?
Let's just be clear. I'm moving the A19-0359.
Yes.
The A9 amendment amends that. The A13 amendment then amends the A9. Someone tell me I'm wrong. Okay, Chair Scott.
Mr. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but I'm just going to ask a question, if that's all right.
Go ahead.
Can you have move three amendments?
An amendment to an amendment to an amendment.
Yeah.
You can't,
just
okay.
Just incorporate it.
All right. I've never heard of that.
I mean, these are...
We can't do it on the floor, but we can do it in committee.
Well, okay, so here's the deal. Yes. An amendment to an amendment to an amendment, yeah, you can't do that on the floor. But in committee, and this was something one of you brought up to me last week, too, that hang on a second, if you're doing a delete all, which essentially is the bill, then you can only offer primary amendments. You can not offer secondary amendments. So we checked in with Mr. McCormick, who said no, in committee, yeah, that would be kind of dirty pool a little bit. So you can do amendment to amendment to amendment because we're doing the delete all.
So you're doing dirty pool.
No, we're avoiding we're avoiding that.
Okay, all right.
By allowing, because the idea is okay. To allow, you know, you
I
guys
have
to
the
do
objection,
that.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, all right. Okay. Yes, but we still need to vote on it. Okay, so A13, all in favor of the A13 to amend the A9 with the A13, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed say no. Motion passes. So we now have the A9 before us.
As amended.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. The A9 as amended is adopted. And now we are back to the primary A19. Is there any discussion on that with the technical amendments to the A9 and the A13? Okay, seeing no discussion. All in favor of the A19, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Okay, now we're back to the bill, and the amendments we're going to take in order is Representative Hassan's A1. You're going to take it. Okay. Go ahead, Representative Hurt. You can present it from the chair. We're only going to have people go up there if we do decide to take testimony on it. The idea was originally, members, because we only had seven amendments and some are going to be withdrawn, that we have time to take testimony on it. But now...
We're not taking any testimony.
Well, no, we still might, but I mean, it depends on... So I had intended to say this at the beginning. Members, we have this room until 12:30. Okay? Because this is markup, it is my intention to go to 12:30. It's my intention to do that. We also have... a room reserved for 5 o'clock if we want to do that. I think we should see how it goes, if we can do that or not, and if folks want to come back tonight, we'll do that. So is that fair, Chair Scott?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Did you say we're going till 12:30 today? What did you say
yes.
this morning? Okay.
The intent is to go to 12:30, and then we had a room at 5. I don't know. We might be able to get done by then.
We might be able to.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Representative Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A1 amendment is actually to really review some data information around a particular program that Minneapolis is looking to launch. And so it's a program that, it's like a municipal ID card, and it has other functions related to that card, but there's a piece of it in which the data is collected on individuals, whether that data is private or public. And so so I'm putting this amendment forward, but what I'd like to do is that I wanted to be able to have the committee know about this bill and that it could be potentially coming in the future, and that I'd like to withdraw the amendment at this time because there are a number of things about it that we would like to work out before we bring this back to committee. And so I'm presenting it, but I'd like to withdraw the amendment.
Understood. Thank you. Representative Herr withdraws her amendment. Do you still have a question?
Well, I had a question if we're going to hear it again. This is, I guess, the intent. Are we going to hear it again this year?
No.
Okay.
Priming the pump. Okay. The next amendment we have is Representative Liebling has the A4. Go ahead, Representative Liebling.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer the A4 amendment. And members, what this does, if you recall, when we had testimony about the cooperative private divorce agreement, there was a lot of discussion about whether there's power imbalance between the parties in a marriage, if there is, how this private divorce agreement might work. And I had a concern that I expressed at that time about when these agreements are first put together, they may be fine, but at some point one of the parties may decide that they need to go to court, that they are unhappy with the agreement. At that point, under the current language, the court has a presumption of following the agreement that was reached between the parties. What the amendment does, the core of this amendment, is to change it to a de novo review so that the court, if the parties are now so out of sync that they are taking the fairly drastic step of one of them going to court to have this, to have the agreement reviewed, I think it makes sense at that point to have the court review it de novo, in other words, as though they're looking at the thing fresh. Because if there's a power imbalance between the parties when they first have this contract outside of any judicial process, it would make sense at a point where there's a breakdown to have the court really review it and say, is this really fair to both parties? And so that's basically what the amendment does. And there's some other minor tweaks in here, like changing shall to may, which staff brought to me because we don't tell courts they shall do something. We ask them to do it. And the only other thing on here is just this subdivision 15 is just that notices need to be provided in languages that the participants can understand, which I think is kind of common sense. So with that, members, I would ask for your support.
Members, I spoke with Representative Liebling about this, and I expressed several reservations, one being that, you know, a primary reason for folks returning to court is child support, and under current law, child support is always reviewed de novo under current law and ongoing. That will never change. The other reservation that I had was that people should be able to leave upon agreement and know that that has full effect, and it's not that their agreements aren't made second-class citizens to other folks that shell out tens of thousands of dollars to attorneys when they agree on their own. However, it was a good faith effort on the part of Representative Liebling to make this more palatable to anyone who has reservations. I think this has been a good conversation, and so for that reason, I'll be supporting the amendment. Any discussion? Any other discussion? Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if Representative Liebling could clarify for me, just so I make sure I understand right. Page 49, line 30, you changed shall to may. Am I reading this incorrectly? If you had already agreed to the divorce, the dissolution on your own, and you went in, it was done, does the court now may have to issue the participant upon request certified copies of summary real estate disposition judgment, or is that during the proceeding that it's a may, or is this after the proceeding, after everything's finalized, is it still a may?
Representative Liebling?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd ask Ms. Mullen to address that.
Ms. Mullen.
Chair and members, a summary real estate disposition is issued after the completion of a divorce, and it relates to the real estate in the divorce. It creates a new court order. The shall to may in that spot has to do with the fact that the court needs to decide if the summary real estate disposition judgment is an appropriate thing to issue, not just rubber stamp something that came in and you don't know what, if maybe they didn't properly address it in the agreement.
Okay. Thank you. I'm good.
Okay. Any other question, discussion about the A4 amendment? Seeing none, then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. The next amendment we'll be taking up will be BA10, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Lesh. So with the passage of the A4, I will, while still having, again, I was one that had some reservations about this article, but with the passage of the A4 amendment, I'll be withdrawing the A10.
Representative Carlson withdraws the A10. Okay, A1's been withdrawn. This is done. Okay, we've got the A8. Representative Cantrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I withdraw the A8.
Okay, A8's being withdrawn. We're just moving along here. Okay. Representative Barr, the A2, and then amended by the A12. Representative
Barr? Withdraw both.
Okay, the A2 and the A12 are withdrawn.
All right, let's vote.
We have one left.
3 and 11.
Yeah, where's my 11 stuff? Okay, the A3, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. This will actually be Representative Mueller's amendment.
Okay, Representative Mueller.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I'm going to talk for a little bit about this, but I'll just cut to the chase in saying this will be withdrawn also. So we're going to continue with that, but I did want to speak to this amendment for just a few minutes. Members, as we have heard testimony about civil forfeiture here, we've heard it a couple of times, and I have done a deeper dive into this bill and talked to a couple of experts who handle these proceedings. And while I think that the intent behind the bill is good, I have really grave concerns about the execution of this and what the language of the bill is actually doing. There are a lot of practical aspects to the bill that are very concerning to me and to some other folks. And I'd just like to talk for a second about some of those and why I thought that this task force in the amendment would have been a good alternative to that. If you look at subdivision 7 in the bill, that talks about the.
What page?
Yeah. Subdivision 7 is on page 20, and it begins on lines 20.13. One of the concerns that I and some folks who really know this stuff well are concerned about how the amounts are set. And that they're arbitrary and they're not defined. Are we talking for cars? Are we talking blue book value? How are we defining the value in some of these situations? If you proceed now to subdivision 13, 14, and then 26 also, so this is all beginning on page 22, I really have some concerns about how this is impacting defendants, because what this law is doing is embedding the forfeiture into the criminal complaint. And so the question becomes, is this going to be used for upcharging by prosecution? is this going to be used as a bargaining tool? You plead guilty to this offense, we'll not do the forfeiture, or you do the forfeiture, you won't plead guilty. The fact that these two things are tied together is very troubling to the practitioners. There's also on subdivision 26 that I mentioned, it's an interlocutory appeal. And so what that does is allow someone who disagrees with the decision to go ahead and have an early appeal. And that's problematic because that can delay the criminal proceeding then, because this is tied together and it can delay a defendant's speedy trial rights. There's also a concern because, again, it's tied to the criminal proceeding, that it violates a person's right against self-incrimination. Members, subdivision 19C is related to some factors that the court will consider, and this, I think, really arises out of some of the concerns that were brought to us when we heard testimony about recent cases. And there was a recent United States Supreme Court case, some Minnesota appellate court cases on this issue. And it's my understanding that what the U.S. Supreme Court said in the Timms case is what Minnesota's been doing for 20 years. We already apply an Eighth Amendment analysis. We have a number of factors that courts already consider. And so the factors in subdivision 19C are new or additional factors that haven't been court tested. And then the final provision I just wanted to bring up was subdivision 27. And this provision allows for attorney fees. And I think the best way to explain this is the example that one of the practitioners gave to me. So here it is. So consider an agency seized $1,000 in cash following a drug sale. The claimant came forward and proved that $550 of it was actually rent money, but $450 was indeed drug proceeds. Under this attorney's fee provision, the local police agency would have to pay the claimant's attorney's fees and costs, totaling $2,000 to $5,000 plus, despite successfully seizing the drug money. And I'll say just with respect to criminal cases, attorney's fees are really rare. The only circumstance I know of that happens is when the state decides to bring a pretrial appeal in a case. Because those aren't favored by the courts. And so if the state brings a pretrial appeal, even if they prevail, they can be on the hook for attorney's fees. However, those are capped. That amount of attorney's fees is capped. So this doesn't have a cap, and that's also concerning. So, you know, I guess the task force, if you look at the bill, the amendment to the bill that creates this task force, beginning on lines 1.15, it really sets out what I think the intent is behind the actual bill itself. And the folks that I talked to who were, you know, opposed to the language in the bill, the experts who are their practitioners, I think everybody is in agreement that we can have some fixes to our forfeiture statute, and that if that also may include how the money is distributed and what happens to that, I think people are in agreement that we can and we maybe should make some changes. But I fear that this takes a sledgehammer where a scalpel is needed. And, you know, the reason why we are withdrawing this forfeiture task force amendment is because it didn't go to GovOps and it's creating a task force. So we recognize that it didn't go through the right process here. I mean, ultimately, I believe that this is a better way to handle this. But for all of the reasons I said, I'm going to be withdrawing this amendment.
McHugh, Representative Mahler withdraws the A, what was it?
Three.
Withdraws the A3 amendment. There was, just to clarify, Representative Cantrell, you withdrew your A11 as well, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so A11 has been withdrawn. So there being other amendments, Chair Considine.
Thank you, and I know that we don't normally comment on that, but I have also had a long discussion yesterday with my county attorney, and I believe he has some fixes that we could look at, and I just flat said it's too late for this year, but I'm hoping we will take this up next year and look at some ways maybe to improve this or put in some safeguards that are, I think, in keeping with what you're trying to do. So looking forward to working on it in the future.
Thank you. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as a co-author on the underlying bill that this was incorporated in the omnibus bill, I obviously have a great interest in this topic, civil assets forfeiture. But I also value Representative Mueller's comments as a prosecutor herself, and she brings some insightful and valuable experience to this very important conversation. So the question I would have, if she's willing to answer, is my understanding, we're going to pass this off out of committee. It's going to go to the floor. My understanding is that this will pass off the House floor, at least with the language included. But do you plan to do anything on the House floor to offer this amendment? I just want to anticipate to the degree you're willing to disclose, continuing to work on this issue to maybe address some of those. While amendments on the House floor are always permitted, they don't need to go to GovOps committee. So just want to get some understanding of what the intent is with the future of addressing some of these concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lucero. I would like to, whether it's this amendment or something else, I am interested in trying to fix the language that's in the current bill. It's my understanding that the Senate has passed out of committee the companion bill, so it's likely that it'll end up in conference committee, but I do desire to try to fix the language before we get to that point.
Thank you. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesch, Representative Mueller. Thank you for the good explanation and explaining some of the issues. It's a very complex issue. One thing that with the current system we have that we try to do is keeping the assets of crimes, especially in drug crimes, those funds getting to the cartel down in Mexico. Superintendent Evans explained it well. It costs $200 to make the stuff down there, and they sell it for, it's been as high as over $5,000 for that same $200, and that money goes back down to Mexico and to the cartel and bringing 10 times as much stuff up here. We need to do everything we can to stop the flow of their profits getting to them. Besides stopping the stuff coming in, we need to stop the funds going down there to support them. And over the years, this has been a very interesting topic, very diverse or divisive issue, and not on party lines, on ideological lines. And so we, over the years, we've been very careful not to pass anything that isn't supported by both sides. And so it's what's in the current bill is a as you said it best, it's a sledgehammer trying to fix a small problem.
Any other comments? I would only say, because I'm not going to make any statements that would potentially bait people, even though that's outside my character, that members, I think there has been a major issues. This could be a situation of dueling anecdotes, whether it's some head of the Sinaloa cartel getting enriched based on Minnesota proceeds, or all the stories we heard from people whose stuff has been taken for really no good reason, and they get caught up in a system that is very unjust. So whether it's the guy's $52,000 car that was the subject of the court case in February, or whether it's a couple of my clients that just had their stuff taken for no reason, and that's not clarified for a year after they become homeless and jobless, that's a major problem too. And so of the 80% of assets that are seized without any hearing because they aren't challenged in Minnesota, I think it'd be worthwhile hearing from folks between now and conference or in conference. How many of those are the cartel? You know, how much of that is the cartel money? How much of that are these people who, when you look at it at face value, wow, yeah, that probably shouldn't have happened. I think that's probably worth examining. Between now and conference or in conference, but I appreciate you withdrawing the amendment, Representative Mueller, and it's time for further discussion on this. Any other comments to the bill 2705 as barely amended? I see no other comments. Members, before we vote on this then, to send it to Ways and Means, I want to thank members of this committee. I'm not much for sentimental hogwash, in the words of Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life, but I am really impressed with this committee, with how engaged people have been. It's been contentious at times, but I also, staff has been incredible. So Callie on the Republican side, Robert on the DFL side, our CA, Rachel, and our CLA, Letitia, and also nonpartisan staff, Mary, Nathan, Ben, and John. You guys are really good at what you do, and it's impressive to see you work and the responsiveness and working on weekends and at night. I know that Rachel was on vacation for a week, but she was in all day Sunday trying to get caught up on stuff for this, which, I mean, I'm impressed. Oh, good time to pass out your caramels from, where are they from, Mexico? Mexican caramels. Did you pay duty on those?
No, duty-free.
Oh, they're duty-free, okay. And then Chair Scott, thank you for being such an able partner to work with on this stuff. I think this is really kind of the way committee should work. Granted, we haven't had as controversial of issues in here that fall down partisan lines as they do in public safety, which makes it a little bit easier, of course. But we still could if we wanted to tussle. But I think we've arrived at resolutions in the way that Minnesotans expect. So that being said, and there being no other discussion, all in favor of House File 20, well, my motion is that House File 25, as amended, be recommended to be referred to Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you, members. I would move on to, oh, Representative Davids is here. You didn't think it was going to go that quick, did you, Chair Davids? Well, we did get through it. Thank you. You're over in taxes, right?
Yeah, over there. Yeah.
Okay.
Did you adjourn, or did we get something else?
No, we have
another bill. 1257.
No, Chair Lesh. Not this other no bill. Motion. Representative Davids, no motion.
Chair Lesh.
So, do I have a motion that Chair Davids' bill, Senate file, this is a Senate file?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, let's pass it down.
Okay, got it.
Chair Lesh, I'll make that amendment.
Okay, so Chair Johnson moves Senate file 1257. That it be referred to the General Register. Chair Johnson also moves the author's amendment, the A190442, to get the bill in the shape that the author so desires. All in favor of the A19 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Thank you, Chair Davids, to your bill as amended.
And thank you, Chair Lesh and members. Senate File 1257 is amended. See, epinephrine auto-injectors used by individuals who completed training program authorized. What this would allow is, and the reason we're here, I guess I should be specific to the Good Samaritan law. So that's what we need reviewed by this committee. I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Joel Carls to explain the bill as amended, the Good Samaritan provisions, anything that would do with judiciary.
Welcome back to the committee. Mr. Carlson, please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. I've had the pleasure of working with Representative Davids on this legislation. And the problem with the current law right now is that while it allows an entity to possess an epinephrine pen, it does not necessarily allow an individual to have it or to use it. And so they're creating a category of an individual that can get trained on how to use it, who can then possess it. And the reason that that's important is that this is a legend drug. You can't get it without a prescription, without changing the law. And it is a life-saving device. If you happen to get injected with an epinephrine pen, and I happen to be allergic to bee stings, so I'm aware of it, if you got injected with an epinephrine pen, you might get a breakout and a little sweat, but that's all that would happen to you. But if you need it, you need it quickly, and this will allow more people access to it. And I wanted to specifically note the protection that's provided, and because I think it's important, and this committee deals with this issue frequently. If you look at 604A01, the Good Samaritan Law, and I believe staff has provided a copy to you in your packet, Good Samaritan only applies to people who are doing things without compensation. If this is your job, if you're on staff at a camp and you're trained to do it, you don't get Good Samaritan protection, and that's right. You should be responsible and accountable, even in an instance like this where there's really low risk of an injury to someone. So that the Good Samaritan law never applies to someone who's getting paid to do their job. And that's what, but what we want is people who are volunteers who are at a scene of an emergency, who have a pen or a chain to use it, will use it in those emergency situations. That, in a nutshell, is the bill, Mr. Chairman. It came to Representative Davids through a constituent of his who was aware of a situation where someone needed the pen and didn't have it. And I think it's a good correction to the law, and the protection that's in it is appropriate for rendering aid at a scene of an emergency. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Questions for Mr. Carlson? Chair Johnson?
Chair Lesh, Representative Davis, thank you for bringing this forward. This bill reminded me to get my EpiPen out of my drawer and put it back in my vehicle because the ground beef season is coming. I'm very much in favor of this bill. As a former first responder, and I'm still certified as a first responder, if somebody was having a allergic reaction to it, or any type of allergic reaction going into shock, I could not use my pen or use their pen on them because I'm a trained first responder. It doesn't fall under the, I don't believe it falls under the Good Samaritan law, where if anybody else could. But our first responders are unable to use that at this time unless they are properly trained. And it's still debatable if they can, but with this bill, it fixes that issue.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Any other comments to the bill as amended or questions for testifiers? Seeing none, then Chair Johnson, and thank you for that explanation, Mr. Carlson, as well. Chair Johnson, amendment is that what's the number on here? House Senate File 1257 as amended. Be recommended to be placed on the general register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. Motion passes. Members, we are at
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Davids.
Thank you.
And members, we're canceling tomorrow's meeting. We're not going to be meeting tomorrow because we've got this stuff done in, what, like 35 minutes? Okay, which, I don't know. I've never seen a markup go that fast, but whatever. And then this represents the end of our regularly scheduled meetings as well. Now, folks know that someone will find out in 72 hours, oh, wow, I didn't get a hearing in judiciary and it's got data practices. Okay, so who knows? Maybe something like that will happen, right? Yeah, Chair Scott's smiling because that happened to her several times in the last 4 years. And so that might happen, but take the regularly scheduled meetings off your calendar and it'll be noticed at the call of the chair. Chair Johnson.
Chair Lesh, I just want to thank you for running a very good committee. It's been very interesting, a lot of good debate. And the best part about this committee, and I feel every legislature should spend one session dealing with civil law to understand the data practices. You've run a very good committee, and I commend you for this. And I think you set a record on the fastest time a judiciary omnibus bill or any omnibus bill has ever passed through a committee.
I've never seen one faster, Chair Johnson, either, so I don't know what happened there. Chair Scott.
And I too want to thank you. You've been really good to work with, and your staff has been very accommodating, and, you know, they're brand-new staff, and it's not easy to get up to speed on how this place works. And so they've done a great job. They've been very accommodating and very friendly to work with, and so I want to thank you for running a great committee and having great staff, and of course always to House Research and our pages and so forth. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Scott. There being no – oh, Representative Castro, go ahead.
I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, for running a really solid committee, and I wanted to thank our staff and everybody who made it possible to do this work. As a first-termer, you know, there's a tremendous learning curve, and so I want to thank you and everyone on this committee for all the insights that folks have added, and it really has been an incredible learning experience. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Castro. Representative Lucero.
To quote Rush Limbaugh, Mr. Chair, mega dittos on everybody who just spoke. I agree. It's been great. I've served on this committee last term under the chair of Peggy Scott, and now serving under your chairmanship,
It's one of the neatest things that I observe is the cooperation between Representative Scott and yourself and other members on this committee, because many of the topics on this committee are not partisan, and we genuinely want to ensure the privacy of Minnesotans at the same time the competing interest of ensuring open access of government. So we've had great conversations, and again, I just thank you for allowing me the opportunity to serve on this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lucero. Representative Grossell.
I'm not going to get all slobbery like the rest and long-winded like some. I think you did a good job. You're on a tight ship.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Representative Grossell. Thank you very much, members. It's been an honor to serve with you thus far, and look forward to continuing. There being no other business before the committee is adjourned.